Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
And we are back on Youth Sports Now, and of course it is time for Mike Naparella and the Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training segment. Hey, Mike, first of all, you know, happy holidays. Merry Christmas, buddy.
Merry Christmas to you, too, as well. And, you know, Greg, I think we'll probably take this moment to just this time that the so many people in the world are celebrating the birth of Christ, and we've got New Year's coming up, and, you know, everyone's in this spirit of season of giving and reflecting on things, just for us to take a moment and just say thank you to all the people out there who have supported Peak Performance over the years. We've just been so blessed, Greg, to have so many youth athletes and their parents and their coaches put their trust in us. I mean, it's such a big deal when someone has an injury and they can't really get back, and they're struggling with things, they don't know what to do, and they come to us for help, to put their faith and trust in us to be the people that help them. It is just a real honor to us, and so we just really feel blessed that people would trust us to do that and give us a chance to help other people and be a blessing to others. And the same thing is true certainly for all the physicians who had choices, but they chose to send their patients to us, and we really just do appreciate that. And we've got, between the injured athletes and the sports training clients, just a lot of people to say thank you to. And certainly, you know, we're on the show here on Youth Sports Now. Definitely want to say thank you to the listeners out there. We've had awesome feedback from people who've listened to the show, and certainly the people who've sent in their email questions. So we know there's people out there who have a heart for youth athletes and have taken the time of their day to sit down and listen to the show, whether it be on podcast or live. And we just really appreciate that. So we just want to say thanks, and certainly Merry Christmas to everybody.
Well, Mike, you know, I certainly, you know, follow those sentiments exactly. And thank you, my friend, for everything that you've done for this youth sports community. I mean, it's, you know, you're thanking the patients and the doctors, and I think the community needs to thank you and Karen and your whole team at Peak Performance. And it's something that, you know, it's something that is really good about the Rochester youth sports community and the overall community, that we've got somebody like you. And Mike, you know, with that whole in mind, with that idea in mind of talking about our whole community, you know, you're doing something at Peak Performance. We talked a little bit about it in the past, but you're working with Paradigm Volleyball Club, which is pretty interesting to me. Part of it, of course, is that your daughter is part of that club, but you are training large groups. So you've got a large group program where I'm assuming there's close to 15 or 20 kids in a group versus the type of training that, you know, an athlete may do if they came in one-on-one with you at Peak Performance. Tell us about the difference and how you guys work it.
Well, yeah, we started touching on this last week, and just to, you know, remind people, Paradigm Volleyball Club is one of several of the travel sort of program volleyball clubs that are for the kids, mostly of high school age, but starting around 14s and going up into 18s, who are looking to maybe take it to a little bit higher level, play a little bit more seriously, get some training and some work outside of just the high school season. And many of these young ladies, and certainly for the clubs that have boys programs, you know, a lot of these kids are aspiring to playing in college, and so they're a bit more serious, a bit more committed, and just trying to work on improving their game and taking it to a different level and get more coaching beyond what they have in just the limited months of their high school season. So when we work with this large group, again, it's, you know, we've got three teams of 10 or two teams of 10 rotating through the night, and they each do a half hour. So in a situation like that, it is absolutely different, Greg, from the way that it would happen from a group that would come into our clinic and I would train them in the clinic. So when we're at Hot Shots and we're training with large groups, we would consider that maybe what we call more of a sports conditioning sort of program. And we began to touch base on that last week, but let me share with you just a little bit on what some of the differences are. Obviously, in a group of 20 or 30 kids, we can only be so detailed in terms of individualizing and customizing a number of things. The first thing is what happens when they first walk through the door is some sort of assessment or evaluation. We can do some scanning through as a group, and we certainly catch the big things that we see somebody's doing. For example, last Thursday night, we had them doing some balancing drills and noticed that some of the girls, but not all of them, but some of them would collapse their knee inside of their big toe when they were doing their squatting. And we don't believe that that's always such a terrible thing. But when it's happening excessively, it certainly is a passive motion we don't like. And so we were able to scan through the crowd and catch the kids who are doing something that is clearly in a path that we don't like, and help them make some modifications on that that the other kids didn't need to do. So there is some of that that can go on in a large group, but it's certainly less than what happened, you know, when we have a group of, let's say, six athletes in a program in the clinic. So we can have, with a large group, hurdles and ladders and medicine balls and things like that. But the real difficult thing, if you've got a group of 20 or 30 kids, is to really assign them the right loading. So that would really affect things like their strengthening program, their power programming, things that involve resistance or weightlifting. We don't do a lot of barbell work. We do some in the clinic, but not a ton. Really think that things like kettlebells and dumbbells, for example, give you a lot more freedom to stay with that term that we've used so often, function, so that we're not locked into sometimes traditional lifts that oftentimes don't quite mimic and help the body prepare ideally for the types of varied positions that we get to on the athletic field or court. So we're really big on dumbbells and kettlebells and resistive tubing, as well as medicine balls and things like that. But I'm talking especially about things you can hold in particularly one hand. So obviously if we've got a group of 10 or 20 or 30 kids, particularly the 20 or 30 size, you'd potentially, if you've got a bunch of kids doing different exercises, we'd have to have more weights, Greg, than LA Fitness or Bally's has on their racks at the gym there for everybody who's there if we're going to do an entire team doing a similar workout. So that's the one thing that when you're in a very large group does get sacrificed a bit, and that's why we call it a sports conditioning program. They'll do balance and core and body weight strengthening, and they can do some resistive work with medicine balls and maybe light dumbbells, but they're not going to get loaded optimally. Now, when those athletes come in our clinic, and some of the kids who are a bit more serious at some point down the road decide they want to do a more dedicated sports performance training program, then when they come in the clinic, we, number one, do a customized initial evaluation on them where they're getting an orthopedic biomechanical screening. We're going to really identify what their unique issues are, what their shortcomings are that are likely affecting their performance. And then those things get addressed right off the bat as a customized, individualized, personalized program versus some generic thing. That, you know, there's a lot of people throwing the words out there, quote-unquote sports-specific, but very often we need to step back and realize that these are athletes with athlete-specific, with individual, personal issues. A left ankle that doesn't move as well as a right ankle, a hip that's a little stiffer than the other side, a core that's weak in one set of obliques but not the other. It doesn't really matter whether I'm a batter or a swimmer or I'm a pitcher versus a catcher. What first matters is what things aren't you bringing to the table as an athlete that you should. And so in a smaller group setting, we can identify those things. In a large group setting, certainly you're not going to be able to be as thorough with that. So in the smaller group setting, and again, we do our small groups anywhere from usually 2 to 6. Once we get above that, it really changes the programming a bit more. In those smaller groups, now people are getting to use the loads they need. If you're doing a step-up exercise that requires 45-pound dumbbells, you're going to hold 45-pound dumbbells. And if there's someone else in your small group that needs 45, they're going to get them as well. So we've got 2 racks of enough dumbbells to do that, and kettlebells and tubing and all those things again. So it does make the program more individualized and customized. The great thing about a large group, Greg, as you know from dealing with teams, is that in that large group setting, there's an awful lot of encouragement and camaraderie and team bonding that can happen, and that has a lot of great assets to it as well. And certainly in a large group like this, there's 20 kids or 30 kids, and in total, it's 50 kids at this club who are getting access to sports training that they never would have had access to otherwise, and oftentimes would have never chosen to do on their own had they not been part of the club. So there's pluses and minuses to both sides. Very rarely is something 100% all good and 100% all bad, and there's pluses and minuses, like I said, to both programs. But it's going really well so far. It's neat seeing some of the changes the girls are already showing, so we're really excited about it.
You know, Mike, with U Sports, not every player is created equal, and certainly not every coach is created equal. So when we talk about some of the things that you guys do at Peak Performance, you know, compared to others, it's not necessarily, you know, created equal. So the expertise that your team has with sports biomechanics and function, I'm sure that that helps you, you know, do things a little bit differently and you know, I would venture even say better. So how does that enter into your training programs, again, whether it be individual or with groups?
Well, I'll give you an example. Even when it comes to something simple like stretching. So, you know, listen, we've got a group of what we're going to talk about, the Paradigm Volleyball girls now, who have a shoulder dominant activity, right? They swing at the ball, they're blocking, they serve. So there's a lot of shoulder things that go on. And so one of the things that happens, whether it be coaches, whether it be the athletes themselves and people looking on the internet, and even with sometimes with physical therapists and personal trainers, when they're given exercise programs, is we look at that and say, hey, that's a shoulder dominant activity. Let's make sure the shoulder is flexible. And so we commonly see kids being taught, you know, one kid taking another kid's arm and pulling it behind them to stretch out their pec muscles, the chest, and the front of their shoulder to make sure that they're mobile enough. Another one that kids may do is they may put their hand on a wall and then start turning their body away from the wall to stretch out their chest, their pec muscles, the front of their body, so that they can feel like that arm swings back behind them very well. And from a sports biomechanics perspective, this is a great example of where having people who are expert enough to know the difference is really critical, because if we go back to the injury thing we talked a little bit about last week, and we've actually discussed in weeks past about a swinging sport like volleyball or like a throwing movement like a baseball or like a tennis serve, for example, is athletes who go through that swinging motion tend to have some risk of what we call shoulder instability. So that means where your arm bone connects to your shoulder blade, there's ligaments that hold that together. And sometimes if you don't have the right proportion of motion in different places, those ligaments can be slowly stretched out. And then we believe it really starts in those youth years when they're being taught early and they're throwing and they're hitting or swinging early. And if that stretches out, it can start to wreak havoc on the body. Now, a challenge with that is you got to ask yourself why they're having a struggle with getting their arm back or why they feel maybe restricted that they want to stretch. When we look at it biomechanically, Greg, in this example, it's very frequently that the kids have a limitation in not that top muscle. If you watch bodybuilders, you see this big round pec muscle that everyone does when they're posing, right? That's the big pec muscle on top. And that's the one that's being stretched if you put your hand on the wall and turn your body away, or if you have somebody pull your arm behind you to feel like you're stretching. But that also stretches out the front shoulder ligaments. And so for an athlete who's got a swinging motion or a throwing motion of their shoulder, that could very much risk the exact thing that we see getting injured down the road. What they really often need, biomechanically speaking, isn't some generic shoulder stretch or a generic pec stretch. They really need a stretch of the muscle that's underneath that. And that's not going to get stretched the same way if their arm is being forced behind their body or on a wall. So we actually, that's one of the first stretches we did with the girls. We had them lie on the ground, and it's a partner stretch. There's very few ways to stretch this muscle well. But a lot of them had these looks of surprise on their face as someone held their shoulder blade down and they moved their body in a way that stretched the deep muscle. And that pec minor muscle, the one that's underneath, it's the muscle that gets shortened when we sit with our shoulders really rounded. And so we can see that. That's a big habit these days. We're on cell phones, we're on computers, you know, we're sitting at a desk doing work. And so those shoulders get rounded and that deep muscle gets short. And then you want to bring your arm back behind you to throw a ball or serve a tennis racket, or in this case, to swing at a volleyball. And the shoulder blade doesn't want to come along for the ride. So if you get your hand on the wall from a sports biomechanics perspective, start yanking on it and turning, you'll feel pulling across your chest. But it's actually the wrong muscle. And it's going to risk stretching out that shoulder. I'll give you another example, Greg, of agility. This is a great example. Last week we had a lot of discussion with the girls about side-to-side and lateral movement. Now, we're talking volleyball, but this really holds true totally for just about any sport that requires lateral side-to-side change of direction. So, for example, for your teams in baseball, another perfect example. Oftentimes when people do agility training, we look on the Internet or we read a book or we go to a course and someone, they come up with all these drills. It's a lot of drills. And so we're doing agility work on ladders. We're going around cones, all sorts of things where we're changing direction, or even plyometrics where we're leaping side to side and doing various drills. But we've really got to take a step back from a biomechanics perspective and understand, how are we going to load that hip? And here's one of the problems that we see all the time and that we did see in these girls and we're teaching them now. Let's say you're down in a squatted position, and in your sport in baseball, Greg, is be a fielder's ready for a ball, right? They're squatted down in athletic posture. The girls are down on the defensive side, ready to receive a serve or trying to get a dig on a spike, on a hit. And they have to move side to side very quickly. One of the things that we see happen oftentimes is that kids plant that leg not far enough outside their body, and so their stopping force in that direction is poor. And then the other thing that happens is they'll hit their foot and move back quickly, or try to move back quickly, but we see the foot roll to the outside a bit, and their knee rolls to the outside with them as well. And biomechanically, here's the problem. If they don't keep that inside border of their shoe down on the ground firmly, so that's the big toe side, and it's the inner side of your heel, if you don't make some conscious effort at keeping that down and you roll too far to the outside of your foot along your fifth toe and the outer side of your heel, if you roll to the outside of that foot, your knee is going to roll with you. And if it does, now you didn't load your butt. And we know our butt is what we call a powerhouse. It's a source of great explosiveness in our body. We've got some of our biggest muscles that we own are attached to our butt, our hip muscles. So if you're going to be explosive on side-to-side movement, you've got to make sure you can keep that hip loaded. But when athletes just start doing all these creative drills and whoever's with them doesn't understand the sport's biomechanics adequately, they may be doing lots of drills. You know, whether they're basic drills, and oftentimes we see kids advancing, you know, to too high of a level of a drill without going back and really understanding the base technique of what they should be trying to accomplish. So we really spend some time from a biomechanics perspective teaching these girls and drilling into them that when they do the lateral agility, that's all fine, but it's not going to be of any value moving up in difficulty on a drill if you don't have the inside border of that foot stopping you and you rolling to the outside too far. You're going to risk spraining your ankle, number one. Number two, you're certainly not going to be very quick, and you're not loading your hip well, so the ability to change direction and go wherever you want will be compromised. So those are two good examples, I think, of where whoever's working with you needs to have enough expertise in biomechanics or sports biomechanics and orthopedics to really get the motions right. It's not just a matter of doing a bunch of creative drills and making people sweat. And everyone and their brother is a sports trainer these days. And some people who aren't formally trained are awesome trainers and very knowledgeable, but not everybody is. And that's one of the challenges in this field that we're in the sports performance side, is there are no standards or rigors that anyone is held to. In physical therapy, it's a different ballgame. In physical therapy, you have to have a state-required license. You have to sit for state exams and pass minimal criteria and have a license. In medicine, it's the same thing for a physician. But in sports training or in personal training, there's hundreds of certifications out there. Some of them are just purely online. Some are just a two-day thing. You know, some take months to do. So there's a lot of variety out there, and people, it's hard for the community to know, you know, how do I know that someone's qualified to instruct me or not? And there's really very few ways to compare people because there's so many different governing bodies or bodies that offer credentials of some sort of certification. How can you compare them? You know, a physical therapist, you know everyone had to pass that same test. So there's some minimal criteria. So it's very difficult for people to know, how can I be certain that the people that are training me know these things? It's not an easy answer.
Well, I mean, the easiest thing to do is certainly to go to Peak Performance. But, you know, that it brings up a good point. Mike, one of the things that I wanted to ask in our remaining minute here with you is this. You know, you talked about some of the things that you're training the girls at the Paradigm Volleyball Club and certainly working with your athletes one-on-one. But at what point, I mean, this may sound like a dumb question, but is the athlete then consciously thinking about, okay, I've got to move my foot a certain way, I've got to move my knee a certain way, I've got to be biomechanically correct? Or is it that you train them so that it becomes second nature? And is it muscle memory? Is it brain memory? Is it both?
Greg, you asked an awesome question, and you answered it as well. I love how you're thinking. I think you're exactly spot on. It's all that stuff. In the beginning, I think, you know, it's going to have to be, some things are going to have to be conscious. From a function standpoint, and when we think of being authentic about the way the body works, never in your life did anyone make you walk by telling you to consciously think of every muscle that needs to be squeezed. Even as I speak, never did I learn how to speak by consciously thinking how to contract the muscles of my throat and my lips and my tongue to make words come out, right? We learn how to do things unconsciously. There's automatic things. So we want to be very careful of overlaying too much conscious thought into performance and function, because we think it cause unnecessary steps, and sometimes it cripples progress. However, there are some times, and this is an example, I think, where bad habits can come into play, and some of the body's natural tendencies, and some of this depends on each specific athlete, right? If someone's got a unique tightness versus somebody else, or a unique weakness versus somebody else, they're going to have different struggles, and they have to be coached through that. Sometimes it's an easier step in the process of coaching them to give them some conscious cueing, some things they literally will think about, versus trying to come up with a drill that they don't have to think about but just makes it happen. We try and do that whenever we can. But so sometimes, just by the way that we have them reach their hand, we can make them load the inside of their foot more. But we do give them some conscious cueing, and early on with basic drills, we know that that's going to be something they're literally thinking of. But soon it starts to become their second habit. And then it's critical, as you said, that it becomes an unconscious, automatic tendency. Only then is it going to be really applied and useful to sport, because things happen too quickly to have it be a conscious thing. You can't have a girl in the middle of a game thinking, when she moves to the side, hey, I better load the medial or the inside part of my foot when I take a step to the side to go try and reach this ball, because I may have to come back quickly the other way. That, there's just no time for that. They've already lost the point, and the next serve is already being served by the time that thought grows through your head. But that's why we do it in drill work. And then it gets automated over time, and that gets applied into the sport eventually.
That just amazes me, Mike, because, you know, it seems like it's so second nature, or it will become second nature. So I'm just thoroughly amazed that these young athletes that you work with can work this way and do this. And of course, it has a lot to do with their teacher, their coach, their physical therapist, and their sports trainer, everybody at Peak Performance. Mike, it's been a pleasure, and you know, always great information. And we've got so much more. We've got some questions that our listeners have been sent in. We'll pick up next time. And hey, you have a good week.
Sounds great. Merry Christmas to everybody.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
And when we come back on U Sports Now, the youth sports nice list for the holiday season.